Podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Ryan, and today we have with us Dr. Melissa Gratz. Melissa, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. So as Ryan said, I'm Dr. Melissa Gratz. I work in our pharmacy practice lab sequence here at Manchester, and then I'm also a medication safety pharmacist at Lutheran Hospital, which is a level 2 trauma center here in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And we asked Melissa to be here today because there was an article that came out recently about U.S. emergency department visits and how those can be attributed to medication harms. And I know this is an article that comes out every so often. This was an article I looked at a lot when I worked in the ED at Lutheran. We wanted to have you and your medication safety specialty come and tell us a little bit about what this article found and kind of what it means. So just to start out, can you give us a brief overview of what the article found?
Yeah, of course. So this article was conducted from 2017 to 2019. It was in 60 emergency departments in the United States. And as Sarah said, they were looking at patients who were admitted to the ED with medication harm. So specifically, either therapeutic use or non-therapeutic use of that medication. And I'll talk a little bit about the differences between those and what that looks like specific to age ranges, because a lot of this is broken down in this study specifically to different age ranges, because as we get older, we're on different medications. So we'll see some differences there. So what we found in this article, or what was found in this article, was that there were about 6 ED visits per 1,000 patients admitted, and 38% of those resulted in hospitalization. So most of the patients, about, what would that be, 62%, didn't actually get admitted to the hospital due to these medication harms, but 38% did. What they found is that patients 65 years and older were more likely to have an ED visit, which we would somewhat expect because most often those patients are going to be on more medications than patients that are younger than 65. As I was saying, that in this article, they broke it down by age group. So I'll talk through the age group and what their most common medication errors were, the reason that they showed up to the hospital. So 65 years and older, it was the therapeutic use of anticoagulants and diabetic agents. So most often for our anticoagulants, they saw warfarin and then our newer class of DOAC, which is a little bit surprising because we don't have quite as much monitoring for the DOAC. But those aren't as closely monitored, and so sometimes those can also cause medication harms. And then our diabetic agents, most often it was insulin. So having too high a dose of insulin and then having a hypoglycemic event is what they found there.
It's interesting in that age range, both those medications, we consider those to be high-risk medications.
Yeah.
So they're high-risk in the hospital, but also in the community setting.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I would expect that for that population, for the 65 and older. Those would be the two classes that I would think that would cause, you know, ED admissions or patients to have issues. And it doesn't surprise me that that's therapeutic use of them. A lot of patients in this drug or in this age class aren't going to be using them non-therapeutic. So then for our patients between the age of 45 and 64, this was therapeutic use of diabetic agents also. So thinking of insulin, type 2 diabetes has been on the rise in previous years. So this is something that I would expect also for this age class. For our patients 25 to 44, it was the non-therapeutic use of benzodiazepines. So also something that I would expect, or I could expect from this age class. A lot of this was related to potentially self-harm and abuse, also tied with alcohol and other illicit substances most often. And then if we're looking at our peds, so this is less than 5 years old, it was unsupervised medication exposure or the therapeutic use of antibiotics. And as we all have kids, we know they get antibiotics quite a bit.
And I think probably they targeted 5 and under because of child-resistant packaging, so they intended for that age group, right?
Yeah.
That would be my read on it anyway.
Yeah.
So is this a change from previous similar studies? You mentioned that this is something they do regularly. Do we see differences in these results?
So the most recent ones that I found, at least, there was a study similar to this from 2004 to 2005, and then also 2013 to 2014. I really like the way that the 2017 and 2019 article was laid out because they broke it down a little bit more individually by the medications and not just overall classes, but also by the different age ranges. But overall, there weren't a whole lot of differences noted here outside of the DOAC medications, just because those are so new to market.
and it seems like nothing is overtaking those, but we haven't really fixed the problem that has been out there for now an extended period of time.
Yeah.
Interesting. So how should this affect, you know, pharmacists as they practice in an institutional setting? So if you're thinking about people working in hospitals, does this affect your practice in any way?
So when I'm thinking of a pharmacist in a hospital setting, there's a few different places where I think we could help reduce these errors. So the first one is going to be if you have an ED pharmacist. So thinking about when patients are admitted, when they do have medication errors, what is our role in that, and how can we help make sure that this doesn't occur again for that patient? So whether it be education regarding their medication, you know, making sure they have the right resources, things like that. Another one would be starting new medications in the hospital. So as we know, a lot of anticoagulants specifically can be started in the hospital. So thinking about warfarin and DOAC, making sure that education is provided and making sure they're on the appropriate dose when they're getting discharged. A lot of times for warfarin, they'll go to a Coumadin clinic very quickly after. But for DOAC, they may not be followed up on for a while. And so making sure that they're on the appropriate dose and then they also get the appropriate discharge education is really important. And then, like I said about discharge education, just making sure that's provided for any medications that are being started in the hospitals.
And then I'll ask from a community perspective. That's my background, certainly. So how about in a community setting? What things should we really be focusing on as takeaways?
So one thing that I didn't mention about this article yet, but I think is really important for the community setting, is that 10% of the overall visits to ED were due to OTC. And only 30% of those involved therapeutic use. So most of those were being used non-therapeutically. And so in the community setting, I think it's really important that when you do have people in your OTC aisles, making sure to talk to them about the medication that they're going to get for whatever they're treating over the counter and making sure they know how to use it appropriately. I mean, I think that's a really big role for us to play.
Did they elaborate more on what kind of medications those were? Are we thinking like, you know, those cough syrups that have like diphenhydramine in it? Or I'm just trying to think of over-the-counter medications that you would use non-therapeutically that will get you end up in an emergency room.
So just some examples from my previous history. I would say, you know, dextromethorphan being abused certainly, as well as Imodium AB, loperamide, is based on an opioid, so that's a potential to be abused in really large doses. And then you think about, you know, Tylenol like overdose and things like that is still, unfortunately, fairly common.
So in the article, the specific OTCs that they know are NSAIDs, the non-opioid analgesics, the single ingredient antihistamines, and then cough and cold medications. And about half of the opioid admissions or coming why they came to the ED were self-harm visits due to OTCs. So, you know, thinking about like what Brian said, those patients that are coming in or getting those medications are not using those appropriately or are using those and abusing them.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. It makes more sense when you think about it from not necessarily they don't know how to use this medication and that's why they got themselves into this situation and more that they do know how to use it and they're specifically using it not that way because they want it to have this side effect.
Some other things that you can talk to your patients about in a community setting would be reviewing the dosing of children's antibiotics, so making sure that's appropriate since we do see that as the main contributor for our children under the age of 5. And then also looking at dosage changes for anticoagulants and insulins based on what they had picked up previously to make sure that those are appropriate changes. Or just talking to your patients about them to make sure that they're aware of those changes also.
I think that's a really good call out on the antibiotics. It's been more than a few times I've seen a kilograms or pounds not transferred and an overdose as a result. So yeah, really good call out.
Yeah, I really think our community pharmacists can play a very large role in this.
So, I mean, this has been great information. Is there anything else that our listeners should know?
You know, just making sure that you're aware of the medications that you and your loved ones are taking and really trying to make sure that you're educated on those medications. And if you do have questions, our community pharmacists are there to answer those along, you know, with pharmacists that you just generally know. Or asking your physician about those. I think it's really important to be educated on your medications so that you know what you're taking and why and what dose is appropriate for you. Along with that, I think listeners should really pay attention to making sure that they have their medications and things locked up for kids specifically. If you remember, I talked about the unsupervised medication exposures also being a reason that the under 5-year-old group was being admitted. And so just making sure that our medications are locked up, stored appropriately, even for our teenagers, you know, because we are seeing so many self-harm cases with different medications. So trying to be diligent with the medications that we do have.
Thank you, Melissa, so much for sharing this information. It's really helpful.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on the podcast. I appreciate it.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you like this episode, please like or subscribe. We would love your feedback on topics that interest you and how we can make this podcast better. Please submit those comments to help us develop content that best serves you. Thanks, everyone.